So we're going to take things back to basics today, just because we've got some new people with us, and also for the rest of us, it's a healthy thing to do, actually. And I put some diagrams together to try and help convey some of this stuff. Some of these ideas are my own personal thinking, and some of them come from other Buddhist teachers. So some of them will work for you, others probably won't, but we'll see. We'll see what works. So a meditation. I mean, there's lots of different types of meditation. Buddhist meditation specifically is very experiential. Other types of meditation tend to take you off on a bit of a journey. You tend to drift off. But actually, a Buddhist meditation is all about being fully aware, fully present. And actually, the word Buddha means awakened one. So it's not in any way, shape or form a sleepy state. It's very much awake. And that's what we're looking at. There are essentially three types of meditation. You can categorize them. These words that I'm going to use, they come from the Pali language, which was the language that was around in the Buddha's day. So the first one is samadhi. Samadhi essentially means the development of concentration. If we're going to have successful meditation, we need to be concentrated. But it's not a an intense concentration like when you're doing your tax return or whatever. It's very much a soft, single-pointed concentration, very aware, but there's a softness about it that we've got to find. So for those of you that practice Tai Chi, you know, I talk about the difference between tense and fully relaxed, and Tai Chi's got to be somewhere in the middle. It's got to have tone. Well, that tone is probably a good word for the type of concentration we're talking about here. The second area is what we call vipassana, and vipassana is the development of insight or wisdom. And again, this is a little bit different. I mean, you know, in the West, when we use words like wisdom, we think of intellectual wisdom. We're not talking about that here. What we're talking about here is understanding of the world exactly as it is. So seeing with clarity the way the world works and the way other people work and the way we interact with it. That's the wisdom we're talking about here. And the third area we call metta bhavana, which is the cultivation of compassion or loving kindness. All three, however, involve mindfulness. Without mindfulness sitting underneath, we won't get anywhere with these three. So you can see mindfulness as a kind of foundation of every aspect of meditation. So I thought what we'd do to understand where these come from and how we actually work with the meditation is look at the nature of mind. Mind is fascinating. Actually, without our minds, the universe wouldn't exist for us. We could have our ears and our eyes, but without mind, it just wouldn't be there. And there's a lovely piece of writing, again by Charlotte Yoko Beck, where she envisages the universe, and she describes how sentient beings essentially are bubbles of consciousness that pop up in this universe. You know, you can imagine a big blank space without them, but these conscience bubbles appear in the universe, and they allow the universe to see itself. Take all that those conscious entities out, and the universe may as well not be there, because nobody can see it. But when those bubbles of consciousness appear in the universe is able to see itself. It's quite an interesting idea. So this conscious mind is incredibly important. happened, obviously. And we're going to take a look at it with some visuals. And the first one you can see here, we're looking at the conscious mind, and we're kind of drawing an analogy with the sea. So there are layers to the mind. Now, what I must just say is these pictures, they are they're not neurological pictures, obviously. That is not the brain. So what we're talking about here is our experience of mind and what mind is like. Mind is not the same as brain. Brain is a container. Mind is actually something much bigger, you know. Your mind is in your body as well as in your brain. And actually, when you close your eyes and try and find the corners of your mind, you discover your mind is a lot bigger than your brain or your body combined. You know, it's something that we can't describe its size. It's huge. But we can form this view of layers. And this picture for me has helped over the years with my meditation, because one of the first things that you come to with meditation, as soon as you sit on the cushion, you hit the thoughts and they kind of get in the way. And a lot of people come to meditation and think we've got to get rid of our thoughts and we've got to push them away somehow and develop this lovely, calm, serene mind. But that's not it. The top layer of the sea is a very noisy place. These massive waves crashing around all the time. There's a lot of junk floating around. And it's chaotic, actually. And that's the top layer of our mind. When we spend a bit of time in meditation, we discover these random thoughts, these big thoughts crashing through. And they are kind of chaotic. You drop down a foot in the ocean, a foot or two, and you come to a layer underneath, which is what I've called here foam. It's a little quieter now. And in the mind, there's a definite layer. And it's full of what I've said here, of tiny thoughtlets. So this is a fascinating layer to get in touch with in your meditation. So, and actually today's meditation, we're going to spend a bit of time with these top two layers. Because this layer below, thousands of little thoughtlets firing off all the time, little snippets of conversation, little memories of a song, even people's faces that you've not seen for years pop in. That's incredible, that is, isn't it? You know, old friends. Well, where did that come from? And of course, lo and behold, lots of these little thoughtlets, they manifest into juggernaut thoughts at the top layer. They become the big waves. So, you know, that little snippet of a conversation yesterday reminds you of something you didn't do, and then you're off and running with something. So, very powerful. It also, I believe, reveals what's going on in our subconscious mind. If you spend a bit of time in that foam layer, just accessing those little thoughtlets and noticing them and looking at them, I think it does reveal a sense of what's happening in our subconscious. So spend a bit of time there. Obviously, in the sea, if we drop down even lower, we get into this deep, dark, cool, calm space. And the mind is exactly like that. Every now and then we get down there and we find ourselves in pure mind. And when we do, we hit what are called the jhanic states, and it's a very beautiful place. We do reach that calm, serene place. But here's the gig. Those big noisy thoughts are still crashing around and the foam's still there. The only way to get to that pure mind is to have a state of acceptance around the nature of mind. That is the only way to drop down. If we try and push out those big thoughts, we'll never get there. So we have to just accept that they're there and let them go, let them be, let them crash around up there. And then we can drop down. And that takes practice to get used to just accepting the nature of thoughts. So in our meditation, actually, all three layers are absolutely important. They're vital, actually, for us to make progress. Those big top-level thoughts reveal the deep ruts in our mental behaviour. They reveal the way we always behave in certain circumstances. They teach us a lot about the nature of the way we interact with the world. So from a mindfulness perspective, it's important that we pay attention to them, not try and push them away. But at the same time, we don't get drawn into the story of them. So then we move on to actually understanding how the nature of mind works. And here again, not a neurological picture, but it is a kind of categorization of different areas of the mind. So the bit we're most familiar with here is labeled the manas. The manas, again, another Pali word, it literally means mind. And it is the bit that does all the logical processing, the thinking, the worrying, the planning, all of that jazz. So actually, it's also where most of those big juggernaut thoughts get processed. Sitting alongside of it, we've got the store consciousness. Now, this is more than just the traditional view of memory. You know, when we think of memory, we think of almost like a picture book of episodes of our life. But here you've got everything that can be stored. So you've got your deeply held religious beliefs. You've got your paranoia. You've got your fears. You've got your ingrained habit. So anything that we can say is stored, an aspect of our what we probably know as self, if we got anywhere close to it, is in there. Okay. This third area is really important from a meditation perspective, the gardener, because it can sit there quietly and watch the other two pieces at work. And that's why we are capable of mindfulness, because we have that thing. You can describe it, if you like, as pure awareness. That's what it is. It's pure awareness of what's going on in our own minds. We can all do that. We can all sit and watch the manas and the store working together. You know, even sitting here now, some of you are probably starting to think about the way those two interrelate. So a thought pops into your head and that engages with something in your store that says, my religious belief leads me to conclude this about this particular type of thought, and therefore I'll go off and think new thoughts based on that. And you can watch all that go on with the gardener. And the idea here is, again, not to interfere with that process, but just to watch with interest and notice the way this processing goes on. It's a fascinating place, which is why, coming back to the first diagram, those top two layers are really important. We should never push them away, because we learn a great deal by using our gardener to see how they work. Okay. The gardener, lots of people start then to think about the nature of the gardener. What is the gardener? Is the gardener me? You know, this sense of I, this sense of self. Consciousness is a funny thing. If you try and grab hold of it and understand it, you can't get a sense of a thing. All you get a sense of is consciousness is an ability to watch and experience. Who's watching and what's watching is a very difficult thing to get hold of. But at least we can understand the watching, we can experience the watching and see the watching. And this is a lot of what we do in Buddhist meditation. So we get in touch with the gardener. And the final picture here is just to kind of illustrate actually what happens in our daily lives. There is a lot of neuroscience associated with this third picture. And that neuroscience has told us that when we're out in this beautiful world of ours, every minute of the day, every second actually, probably every sub-second, there are around 9,000 different sense experiences hitting us. Imagine that, 9,000. The trouble is, our conscious mind is only capable of picking up 9 of them. But there are still 8,992 still hitting us. And they're hitting the subconscious. They are hitting us. Isn't that amazing? So we can only experience in our conscious mind 9 of them. And we experience the world through our 5 senses. Sense of sight, taste, hearing, smell and touch. But what the Buddha found was that there is a 6th sense, and that is mind itself. Okay. So you've got 8,000, 9,000 impressions hitting you all the time, and every single one of those goes through this process that I'm showing in this bottom diagram. The first thing that happens is it touches what we call in Buddhist psychology the sense door. And this is essentially the first bare awareness of the sense experience. And it's a stage that generally we're unconscious to, we're not aware of. It takes a great deal of training to become aware to that extent, such that you can pick up that sense experience in its pure, naked sense, if you like. Because all of this stuff in this process that I'm showing in this diagram happens in an instant. And actually the Buddha said it happens in 1/64th of a finger snap. Not sure how he measured that, but it's a very tiny period of time. So to be able to actually drill down and experience a sense impression go through this is very, very difficult. But the second part of this, well, we can start to get in touch with in our mindfulness practice. And actually, I've done talks on this before. It's called the Vedanas. And it is the first impression of conscious awareness of thought, of sense experience. And here, essentially, the first thing we do is we choose our reaction. So a smell enters the nose and we decide very, very quickly, like, dislike or neutral. And we put it into those 3 camps. Now, we don't all put these things into the same camp. So Marmite, there you go, taste, sensation. Lots of people love it, lots of people hate it. I don't think there's many that stick it somewhere in the middle. I think Marmite is one of those things you either love or hate. But there are plenty of things that are kind of boring and wander around in the middle. And probably a great deal of those 9,000 sense objects, the reason we're not consciously aware of them is because they're all a bit boring. We've seen them lots of times before. And that chair over there isn't particularly exciting, but it's touching my sense door. And of course, then what happens is the mind really kicks in and interpretation follows. So the first thing we then do is justify our choice. I like that smell because it's donuts and I've had those before. I quite go for a donut. And off we go. So we really embellish. But even that first stage, the Vedanas, the initial feeling and choice, there's loads going on. And it's driven by that combination of the manas and the store consciousness. Our deeply held beliefs might kick in here to drive our choice of whether we like or dislike something. This really helps us from a mindfulness perspective. Our prejudices will be driven by this. Our prejudices form and hit us the moment we reach that stage of Vedanas. We react very strongly to some things, and that's our prejudices. And if we become mindful of what's going on here, we can even start to watch that process. So when we see something on the street, good old Boris Johnson fell into this one the other day, didn't he, with Muslim women and the burqa, when he talked about they look like letterboxes. There's clearly a prejudice there going on. So that's hitting his Vedanas, and then his interpretation is kicking in big time. And before he knew what he was doing, he said it on national radio or whatever it was. Not good. But there we go. That's the way we work. So all of these three diagrams we can explore in our meditation. And this bottom one becomes fascinating because I mentioned that there's a sixth sense, and that's the mind. And just the same as these five senses, the top five, have triggers, so that incense enters the nose and triggers the sense door, Vedanas kick in, and I like incense because I've spent a lot of time with it, but somebody with asthma might be afraid of it, might actually create a feeling of fear. In them. That sixth sense also has its trigger. And this is where your mind kind of starts to turn inside out, because the mind's trigger, its sense experience, if you like, are thoughts. And they work on the mind exactly the same way as the chemical triggers the sense of smell. So thoughts, if you spend a bit of time with them, these juggernaut thoughts in the top layer, you'll discover their random nature. They come up out of nowhere, just the same as a smell does. And they come through, and the mind has its own sense door, just the same as the others do. The thought hits the mind's sense door, and lo and behold, there's a Vedanas reaction to it. So even that thought we react to with like, dislike or neutral, and then we embellish it and off we go. And I think this is where a lot of the chaotic nature of mind comes in, why the mind wanders such a lot. So we can really start to look at this process in our meditation to feel what's going on in our own minds and start to understand what's happening with this structure. Okay. So that's quite a lot, isn't it? It's a complex process. It's no wonder we find ourselves such a chaotic bunch of human beings. But it's beautiful. This is where our creativity comes from, you know. This is what makes us so wonderful as human beings and so individual and so different. Each and every one of us. So today's meditation, we're going to use the mindfulness of breathing. There's a lot to get our minds around here. So what we're going to do to break things down and keep things simple is just look at this top diagram with our meditation today. So we'll talk through a body scan, and we'll come into the breath, and we'll use the word calm to try and bring your sense of car to these pictures. And then we'll let go of the word, and still using the breath to anchor us and keep us present, we're just going to become aware of the nature of mind and study these top two layers. So just see if you can become aware, first of all, of the big thoughts rolling through. And just look at the nature of thoughts, their chaotic nature, how they flow through the mind. And in particular, see if you can access that layer of foam underneath and become aware of these thousands of tiny little thoughtlets firing off. And sit there and take a fascination with it, because it is quite incredible. Okay, so just settling down, closing our eyes, letting our gaze, our internal gaze, just slightly below the horizon, helping to achieve that samadhi state. We're going to start with our little Buddhist mantra. Feel free to join in. Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dhammaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Nama, Am Hung. Just sitting here, tuning into the space around you, an awareness of friends sitting with you. And we can offer ourselves just a gentle resolution to have a sense of acceptance about our practice, but a sense to stay with it, to try not to let the mind wander, but to stay fully present. So we tune into the experience of our feet. Really experiencing everything we can find there. Many, many sensations, both inside and on the surface of the foot. And we work along the sole of the foot and over the heel. Gently working up through the ankle bones. And up into the shins and the calf muscles. As we travel, any tension, just letting it go, relaxing it. Keeping our mind, our concentration on just awareness of sensations. Pure physical sensations. As we travel, noticing the mind's tug to interpret what we're feeling and label. When that happens, just bring the awareness back to the pure sensation. And we work up into the knees. Any aches and pains that may distract us, just develop a sense of gentle, compassionate acceptance towards them. sense of friendship. Don't push them away. Moving up through the thighs and the hamstrings. Seeing what you can feel. Contact of clothing, perhaps. Any tension, ease it out. And into the sitting bones, sinking into the seat. Here, a real sense of contact with the earth, relaxing down. And as you settle, allow the head to float up, feeling the spine easing out. A sense of strength comes into the spine. And a sense of freshness comes into the mind with it. Helping us to establish that feeling of resolve to stay with the practice. Now let's take our awareness into the stomach and heart area. This is where we have our emotions, so we'll spend a bit of time here. Study how you feel. Stay away from trying to understand the emotions or judge them. Just experience. Gentle, friendly observance of our emotional state. Then we come up into the shoulders. See if we can find any tension and let it go. Let it melt out. And our awareness runs down our upper arms. Over our elbows, forearms, and down into the hands and the fingers. Here in our hands, we can find thousands of tiny little sensations firing off. If you really pay attention, can you feel the bones in your fingers? Can you feel your fingernails? and then come back up to the head. And explore the scalp for any sensations you can find. Tiny little sensations across the scalp. Come into the face and ease out tension there, letting go. Smoothing out the frown. Experience a gentle smile of compassion behind the eyes. Bring all of these different sensations together in the body, feeling it all firing off, thousands of sensations, containing your emotions, sitting in this space with friends. This is the experience of our life right now. Nothing else matters for the moment. Just be here. Bring your awareness to the breath. As you gently breathe, experience the physical sensation of the breath where you can most feel it. In the stomach, perhaps deep in the belly, back of the throat, or in the nose, wherever you can most feel it. And just sit with your awareness there. As you gently breathe, hear the word calm echo in the mind and settle in the body. On each out-breath, breathing in and out, word calm on the out-breath. When the mind wanders, bring it back to the breath, calm. soft, gentle, concentrated awareness on the breath. Just let thoughts go like clouds in the sky. Breathing gently, calm. Now we let go of the word, still with a background awareness of the breath to keep us anchored and present. Just turn your awareness to the nature of mind, noticing the thoughts that are flowing through. Try not to follow the story of the thoughts, try to stay present. Noticing the thoughts, the big ones and the small ones. Take a fascination in them as they gently flow through the mind. mind on the breath, staying present, awareness of the nature of mind. Gently relax your concentration, bringing your awareness back into the room, feeling your body sitting in this space, together with friends. And we offer ourselves a silent resolution to take this sense of peace and mindfulness out into our week. Like ripples in a pond, we make a difference. Om Mani Padme Hum. And when you're ready, open your eyes and bring your meditation to an end.